With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS. You're with George Eliason, live from Donbas, Ukraine, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to Wednesday. We're at the middle of the week, and Ukraine is just, honestly, if it's not weirding you out, that there's just something wrong. The way this war is going, the way the Ukrainian government's acting, I mean, their actions, putting the world on the edge all the time. And they get money for this. They get money for this every time. Declare an Article 4 situation for NATO. I mean, after firing the missiles yourself, billions of dollars come in. I mean, you know, I can't blame them. I mean, what kind of, you know, I mean, that's just an amazing gig. You know, can you imagine being paid for acting that badly as a world leader? Zelensky is really carving out a new Nick industry worldwide. That's something, you know, beyond being scary, it's mind-blowing to watch. It really is. Now, this morning on Mike Ryan's show, we discussed a little bit about they're calling them Russian soldiers. It's actually Lugansk People's Republic military that surrendered and were executed by the Ukrainian army. And this is a blatant war crime. Now, the Ukrainians are trying to say that, well, yeah, someone came out of the building with weapons and started firing at them. Well, here's a problem. The military doesn't wear ninja outfits. They're not wearing all black. This guy was just in all black. Why was that? The Ukrainians, some of the territorial defense battalions, if you want to call them that, when they're going out and they're doing cleansing, that's what they wear. And more than likely, that's where this guy came from. Part of what we discussed this morning is the fact that taking part in that operation was an American mercenary named Chris Naganuma from Colorado. And he's been identified. And this is going to be a problem for every merc that goes there. Before, by the time they leave, they will have committed war crimes substantially. Ukraine is holding these people back, and a lot of them, believe it or not, don't even get paid or don't get paid much. They're volunteering to go over there on the basis of goodwill. What they know from the propaganda in media, and if it comes out of Ukraine, it is propaganda and information war. There is no news coming from Ukraine, which is unfortunate. The only news that's come out in the last few weeks or months was the fact that Zelensky banned journalists from the front lines and from Kherson. Why would he do that? It was because they were rounding up people, Ukrainian citizens, to be beaten, to be murdered. And what they call a pro-Russian stance, it all depends, your stance in a lot of cases depends on what your neighbors actually think of you. And put yourself in that position. What do your neighbors think of you? If they don't like you, if you have a running feud, they can tell the military coming in, because the ones coming in are police battalions, they're nationalists. Yeah, yeah. Joe over there, yeah, he's a Russian supporter. And that's all it takes. That's it. And this has been going on the entire time. And we're looking at 9 years now, unabated. Now, this year isn't the first time Americans have been involved in this kind of thing, and we'll get into that in a minute. But what about the mercenaries and these volunteers that are there now? There are a lot of videos where they're doing interviews with them talking around the fact that they were involved in these kinds of actions. And they brush it off, well, you know, it's war. No, it's not war. To make that justification so you can live with yourself is honestly pretty cowardly. Military aren't there to attack civilians. And, you know, again, war crime. Unarmed soldiers that have surrendered is a war crime. So taking part in that and, you know, just going forward because everyone else is doing it, or you're afraid for your own life, or you feel you're stuck, which is came out in some of these interviews that I've been looking into, that's not anyone's problem but your own. It's just exactly what I tell them. You know, it honestly makes me sick that people from, especially after being trained in the American military, we do these things. Back in 2014, the most famous American fighter to come here, he was a captain, U.S. Army captain, retired. His name was Mark Pulowski. Pulowski had the distinction of being the nephew of the third in charge of the Bandera in in World War II. He's Mykola Lebed's nephew. Now, Lebed, even at that time, now when you look at all the horror of World War II, to be able to become labeled as a sadist when you're standing among Nazi murderers, a mass murderers, you stand out with that distinction. That means you're going places in that world. You've done something. Well, you know, we don't judge people based on who their relatives are. But Pulowski and the people like him in the Ukrainian diaspora were brought up separately. They were brought up to think that they were better. Being a Ukrainian nationalist, it doesn't make you a better person, like, oh, you've got, you know, better morals or this or that. It makes you a better person in terms of, well, there's a guy in a loincloth and I have a Ferrari. I'm a better person. And that's how they look at themselves. They look at other Americans, especially the political structure, democracy with, you know, Republican Party, Democratic Party, as being incomplete and weak. And the reason being is all nationalisms have to start with the assumption that they are perfect. If you're perfect, you don't need to change or get better. And if you're perfect, everyone else is not. And that's their outlook in society. So this guy comes here at Euromaidan coup, starts to, and he was in Ukraine for years before that. You know, I wouldn't give you another impression. He was an investment banker, and then he bought farms in Ukraine. When I say farms, we're talking about thousands and thousands of acres. He became a big producer. The war starts, well, the Maidan starts, and he's out there. when the day that the sniper incident took place, where 100 people were killed, he was in the Hotel Ukraina on the 11th or 12th floor where the snipers were. And this was not reported for some reason. Well, if we fast forward into the spring, he joined a group called Donbas Battalion. And that was headed by Simon Semenchenko, who went around and behind the Ukrainian military. And after the Ukrainian military would gain area, they would go in and find anybody that they didn't think was a good Ukrainian and kill them, torture them, kill them. And there were actually arguments within the ranks of Donbas Battalion. The second in charge actually put up a Facebook post. He got arrested for this, complaining that Donbas Battalion, all they did was go into the towns, and they were such cowards, they were throwing grenades in the root cellars where the people were hiding because there might be someone there that could fight back. This is the kind of crew that they actually are. They went to towns where there was no defenses and they'd sit outside and hit it with artillery. Maternity wards, hospitals, in Prvomaysk, they just devastated the population. I actually went to one of the mass graves up there when they were uncovering and recovering the bodies. And Donbas Battalion and the Ukrainians, they actually set up at one side of the street. They had a clear view of a school at the bottom. It was at the, they were at the top of the hill, and they were shooting school at the school kids for 7 years. The lines didn't move there. For 7 years, they were shooting at that school. That's just the mentality of these people. When I was in a town that early on in 2014, we ended up on the Ukrainian side of the line. Ukrainians took over the area that I lived in. And the first thing that we, our introduction to it was a group called Right Sector driving down the street in SUVs with the back open and heavy machine guns hanging out the back. Anytime you walked on the street, there'd be heavy machine guns on you. Nobody, not even old ladies, could walk down the street safely. That's just the way it was. For over a month, they would empty out all the stores and they locked everybody in to four or five towns, pretty much, because with tanks. They had snipers, they mined areas so you couldn't get out. And they put a prohibition on leaving. Try to leave, get shot. Well, one day, the Ukrainian army was pulling out of there. They were there too. And they said, get the kids out of town. You have 2 days, they're going to cleanse. And here we are stuck with that. In the meantime, Donbas Battalion had come. They'd gone to the camp, and there was over 1,200 of these people there. 1,200 of them. They're going to cleanse the town. What to do? What to do? No way out. And we weren't going to leave our, the neighbors anyway. I mean, can you imagine you're locked into a place? You know they're coming. They told the postmaster in that town, what I just told you, get the kids out. But there was no way to do that either. So we're waiting expectantly on that. The day before it was going to happen, we walked into town and there was this guy. And looking at him, and he's wearing khaki. And I'm looking at him, and he's not from here. And he's standing like he's military from like Fort Bragg. All right. And so I'm looking at him, and I said, oh, geez, okay, here we go. First American. So after, you know, we talked to some people, tried to figure out what was going on. We go back, and, you know, the dog starts barking. And you wonder, okay, what's going on now? So I go over to the gate, and we had, you know, the walls at houses, if you've seen video, are fairly high. You can't see a person there, you know, maybe 6 feet. So you can't see into someone's property, and you can't see out. So I look through the gate, and there he is. I found out later that it was Mark Bielowski. This guy, the nephew of a sadistic World War II killer, is at my gate trying to figure me out, which was kind of interesting. If he'd gotten out of the car and he'd come toward the gate, you know, things would have been quite a bit different than they are now. And he was killed a little over a month later at Ilovaisk. The fact that he was there, he was doing these things the entire time, and he actually complained about it. He's got a Twitter account that he was complaining about killing civilians. And, you know, that's how real it is. It was starting to get on his nerves a little bit, I guess. But that doesn't change the crimes he committed. So this guy is buried as a hero. And what they'd done was murder 1,000 civilians. Now you've got these Americans that are here doing this now, and they've been coming in and out all from Europe, from everywhere. A few times during the war, Ukraine was offering safari vacations. Go to the front line. They'll give you a sniper rifle. You can fire, you know, heavier weapons. You pay in a fee, of course. They actually had this kind of thing set up. And now we have a situation where, you know, okay, we have these people on video footage. These events are happening. They're there. Are they liable for them? Now, let's say this, and it will. The Makiivka case, where this was so blatant, should all the surviving soldiers there be tried? Should they? I think so. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few minutes. Think about this. I'm George Eliason. See you in a minute.
Joseph Arthur on TNT Radio.
I'm surprised that Thanksgiving is not canceled. Wouldn't the woke police go after Thanksgiving? Haven't they railed against it in the past, as it has its roots in the decimation of the Native Americans and all that kind of stuff, the slaughter of the natives of our country? Don't woke people rail against Thanksgiving, or do they take the day off?
The woke culture?
The ones that hate comedy and have a problem with everything. I would think they would have a problem with Thanksgiving.
Well, I don't think we need them to cancel Thanksgiving, because the cost of your Thanksgiving dinner is more than enough to probably cancel it in most places this year, sadly.
You know, they would give Native Americans blankets with, like, the plague in them and stuff like that. And people, I just remember people used to rail against Thanksgiving on those lines. But, you know, I think this year we all just need a celebration of gratitude.
Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Every year, Steve Faircal climbs the stairs at the John Hancock Center in Chicago, 94 floors to the top.
It's called the hustle up the Hancock.
It's hard to believe when you watch Steve today that a few years ago, his lungs were failing and he was fighting to survive.
For 8 hours a day, someone was pounding on my chest to try and keep my lungs clear. I honestly don't think I had more than a couple weeks to live.
That's when Steve received the gift of life, a double lung transplant made possible by an organ donor.
After I got my new lungs, I started doing things that I had never been able to do. I never knew that breathing could feel this good.
Steve climbs to honor his donor and to raise awareness for organ, eye, and tissue donation.
Wouldn't you like that when you left this beautiful planet, that you could save a few lives on your way out? It's an incredible gift.
Imagine what you could make possible by leaving behind the gift of life. Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
Democracy in Action. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. Now, we're talking about foreigners fighting in Ukraine, particularly in Americans. If we went back to Bucha back in the springtime, we had that big massacre there. Ukraine's ombudsman was fired for lying about Russians torturing, raping, and murdering people after the fact, after all the headlines were already out there. But the simple fact remains is that the comptroller of Bucha said on social media that Azov was going to clean up Russian influence in Bucha and for people to stay in. And it was the people with Russian humanitarian aid packages or white armbands that were killed. That's what the media showed. Now, Azov in Bucha was led by a commander they nicknamed Botsman. He's the head of foreigners. There were a lot of Americans and foreigners from the UK, Australia, wherever in Bucha during this time. And quite frankly, if Azov was committing these atrocities, guess who was doing it? If you go further, we've had videos come out over the same time period and into the summer that showed the Ukrainians shooting Russian prisoners in the legs and shooting them in the head. These were prisoners. This again is Azov, same group under Botsman. So we're looking at foreigners doing this. Now, why would Ukraine want to involve foreigners? Think of the embarrassment that any government would have if their citizens are up on war crimes charges for fighting for Ukraine. Think of the amount of embarrassment after all the money that's been given. Doing this is for Ukraine, it's a really smart move because no government is going to want that kind of bad press. And you know, and I know that that's where it's going to be laid because they allowed it. So to keep it out of the press, you've got to keep it from being prosecuted. And if you can't prosecute the Americans or the Brits or the Australians, you can't prosecute the Ukrainians either. It's a get out of free jail card. Get out of jail free card, rather, sorry. And this has been happening. It's been happening in view of everybody. And it's just like what happened in Makiivka. You've got major media platforms saying, they did this, but were they firing in self-defense against guys that are on the ground? Yeah, okay. Face down. Sure. Yeah, you were firing in, self-defense. And they're allowed to get away with this. Well, we don't understand what happened, even if it's in plain sight and we can see it. And that's why I'm saying that they're going to block any type of prosecution any way they can. We have Americans there. How would that look for Joe Biden right now? Not very good. Zelensky's cleansing of Kherson actually makes a point. Get rid of the journalists. Get rid of anybody that can actually document this. And it's been going on. The pictures were in the media. Video's been in the media showing that the Ukrainian militant groups or army grabbing people on the street, beating them, cuffing them, taking them. Where are they going? These are just people walking down the street. Well, what didn't they do? They wouldn't say the equivalent of Ukrainian Heil Hitler, Slava Ukraina. Is that the litmus test? Probably is. It probably is. And if that is something that it's barely understandable, and it probably is, unless you're in this part of the world. The last thing people's grandparents or great-grandparents heard across Ukraine, in most cases where they were killed by the Nazis, was Slava Ukraina. That's what their murderer yelled out. That's essentially a Ukrainian nationalist Heil Hitler. And that's just how radically evil this whole political ideology is. It is just plain evil. Now, let's look at the overview of the war right now. We've got, Ukraine has over 100,000 dead soldiers. That's how much they sacrificed. How many more can they sacrifice? Now, if they could muster an army of over 280,000, okay, 100,000 dead is a lot. And there's another 300,000 wounded. And of those, 40,000 are maimed. Now, these are sourced estimates. And, I mean, those numbers are staggering in terms of, is Ukraine winning? Is Ukraine losing? Is Ukraine holding its own? You've just cut a big hole in the future of your society. And all the only thing that had to happen up front was to negotiate this. And what gets lost all the time is that Ukraine had 100,000 soldiers ready to commit what they call the Croatian scenario in Donbas against Lugansk and Donetsk. The Croatian scenario, and this is going back into January, February, when all this started, they were going to in and murder everybody that didn't shout Slava Ukraine passionately enough, or force them to run, one or the other. And they were going to try to roll over both republics this way. That's what started the war. That, attacking Russia at the same time, showing them. It's not the why they started the war, but it is the what. This is what was going on. So now they're complaining that Russia's going, Russia's going slow to protect people's lives. And Ukraine, beginning this, starting the war, was going to try to kill literally 50,000 to 100,000 civilians right away. And they were given carte blanche on this, as long as they did it quickly. And that's what Russia stopped. I mean, it's just crazy in this day and age, but that's what Russia stopped. Now, going into the southern, southeast region where near, Kherson, and Bakhmut. Now, Kherson is what it is. You've got the Ukrainians in Kherson. You've got the Russians across the river. And Ihsan is, was in artillery range, and that's happening. It was important for the Ukrainians to get, because further south, they're going to try to control all the ports at the mouth of the Dnieper. Now, the way they forced the situation a month ago, because of the dam north of Kherson, they found themselves in the more or less the same situation as Russia is in now in Kherson, a little bit north in a town called Bakhmut. Now, Bakhmut is making the news because, well, it's just the opposite that's actually happening. Ukraine controls it, but Russia's moving up on it very slowly, but they are. Ukraine is saying that, you know, it's crazy for Russia to try to even take the town. It has no strategic value. It's this, it's that, it's the other thing. And yet it actually holds a lot of strategic value. This city is more or less a nexus in that battle area, controlling supply lines and battle routes. Coming from Russia's side, it is the way to Slavansk and Kramatorsk. And Ukraine has 5 command centers on that side near them. Slavansk has a lot of sentimental and strategic value in Donbass and Russia. It was the first city that was declared free in the spring of 2014 from Nazi occupation regarding the neo-Nazis that had come off Maidan. It was a big deal and a rallying point. From Slavansk and Kramatorsk, you go through Bakhmut, it opens a road where you can take over, you can invade Luhansk and Donetsk. So it is a big deal on that side. And you have a supply line to do that with. So this battle here over what Ukraine is saying is a totally unimportant city is actually strategically very important. And so we'll see how that plays out. My thoughts are that is things start cooling down a bit. And it's not just about the frost. It's about having the actual pieces on the chessboard in place. Russia will move into that and take that. Slavansk itself is just too important in people's psyche here for it to stay in Ukrainian hands much longer. Now, looking at the G7, and this is something that they were talking about for months now, capping Russia's oil prices internationally. Now, can you imagine this? You're the customer and you're going to tell the retailer what the price of their product should be. Okay, now are we going totally socialist here? I mean, the G7 is the 7 largest economies, right? It used to be the G8, included Russia. It's supposed to be, a capitalist country where the leaders of these huge economies go, the leaders of the countries. Now, they're going to decide what Russia's oil prices are. How do you think that's going to go over now? You know, honestly, okay, yeah, we'll give you $27 a barrel on that. What do you think? I just don't see this one working out. The Chinese want oil. India wants oil. There are a lot of countries that want oil. They want gas. Where do you think this is going to go? Expect huge spikes. As soon as they get this sorted out, and it's supposed to be in December, expect huge spikes from where it is now. They're not punishing Moscow. They're punishing everybody else and getting people into getting used to the big price spikes, the great reset. is going to cost. And it's just the beginning of that. You know, this puts us in a world of hurt unless it can be turned around. And I'm still optimistic that it can be. And it's something that everybody needs to do their part and work on so that it is. And locally, that means changing out government through elections. People that are supporting this stuff need to be voted out. And, you know, that's up to people to do. Ukraine is setting up invincibility centers with heat and power for winter. Now, this is really interesting because what this is going to do is basically set up tents where you can come get warm. You'll be able to charge your phone, get internet service, water, and a pharmacy. And this will work around the clock. They're setting up the same situation they had on Maidan for people that were protesting. Now, if you have an apartment in Kiev or a house, okay, in outside the city center, this does absolutely nothing for you. You're going to be in the cold, have to travel in the cold to get there. Charge your phone, okay, with thousands of other people, wait in line, all right. Get bottles of water, but they're going to limit what you can carry. But of course, by the time you get it home, it's probably going to be frozen anyway. This is not going to work for the winter in Kiev. This isn't going to work. What they're doing is just something that they can say, well, yeah, we did it. We tried. We helped you. But, you know, you're not grateful for, you know, the services we're providing. And, you know, I'm flabbergasted. This is not what it appears to be, you know, at all. They're setting people up. They have been setting people up to suffer this whole time. One interesting point, though, is if you look at what Ukraine's been doing with Moldova, now Ukraine has been selling, or actually stealing, gas from the pipes going through Ukraine from Russia that were earmarked for Moldova. Russia is actually going to cut down on the amount of gas it's actually sending out. This, I mean, think about it. It's just crazy. So they're stealing the gas. They're not saying where the gas is, you know, going. It's not helping the Ukrainian people. Whoever's selling the gas is actually making a bundle. This is how Yulia Tymoshenko made her fortune. She tapped into the transit lines, ran her own lines, and sold the gas. Now, she didn't pay for the gas. She didn't pay for the delivery. She just paid for a new pipe. Yulia Tymoshenko is a billionaire. So you see this going on again here. They're either going to sell it in Europe, more than likely. It'd make more sense for them to do that than to try to sell it in Ukraine. As I said, the Ukrainian government officials, which would have to be involved in this for it to even happen, are not the Ukrainian people's friends, not in this case. We need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. I'm George Elias, and this is TNT Talk Radio.
The midterms, and America has voted. With his expert analysis, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
It used to be said that the Democrat Party was the mommy party, saying yes to everything and handing out the goodies. And that the Republican Party was the daddy party, saying no and being fiscally responsible. Well, those days are long gone because both parties now say yes to everything and hand out the goodies. No, instead what we have is the grown-up party and the toddler temper tantrum party. Republicans, even though I disagree with them on a lot of issues, are the only grown-ups in D.C. Democrats, meanwhile, throw a toddler temper tantrum at the drop of a hat. Whether it's the squad, being oppressed by this or that, the Antifa BLM riots, Russia, 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 Mueller-gate, impeachment 1.0, impeachment 2.0, FISA-gate, Trump's Mar-a-Lago break-in, the J6 sham hearings. Doesn't matter what the issue is, Democrats throw toddler temper tantrums. Well, they need to be treated like toddlers, sent to their room without dessert. For MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
I've been driving for most of my life, and I've always been a safe driver. But as I've grown older, driving has become more challenging. Intersections feel busier. Driving in peak hour traffic and travelling longer distances is stressful. And driving at night or in bad weather is risky. Even small mistakes can be costly. Look for the signs. If driving is getting harder, there are alternatives. Make a plan to stop driving on your terms. Don't stop driving by accident. Think Road Safety, a message from the Government of South Australia.
Big pharma corruption, medical corruption, government corruption, political corruption, climate change corruption. The threats to your happiness are many, but that's where we can help. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio. Our truth shall keep you free.
And why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all the major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio. Now, another interesting story that's come out, and it's something that's worth noting, is that Viktor Orban went to a soccer match wearing a scarf depicting some Ukrainian territory as part of Hungary. And the Ukrainian Foreign Ministry is angry. Now, they showed a picture of him in a scarf, and the map showed Greater Hungary, which included part of what's now Austria, Slovakia, Romania, Croatia, Serbia, and Ukraine. Well, why would he do that? Before the end of World War I, the Austro-Hungarian Empire was huge, and parts of all these countries were in Hungary. It was actually after the World War I settlement, that they started losing this. So this is showing cracks in the shoulder-to-shoulder flannex of Europe about Ukraine. And the unity just isn't there for old Viktor anymore. In Ukraine, on the border with Hungary, you've got towns that still speak Hungarian. They don't speak Ukrainian. And Ukraine has started making them second citizens. Hungary's response to that was to give them passports, start handing out passports. I mean, can you imagine, you know, okay, this is how the borders fell, okay, but we're Hungarian. So because we're Hungarian, you have less rights than the people in the next town over, even though, you know, you weren't clamoring to leave Ukraine. You weren't going back, you know, complaining about the overthrow of Viktor Yanukovych. You weren't doing anything. But you're Hungarian descent. So Ukraine started making it difficult for these people to live there. And they did this. They do this to all the ethnic regions, by the way. What they're trying to do is homogenize everybody into one basic lump based on language. And they couldn't do that in Donbass. They couldn't do it in Crimea. They're not having any luck with that in Odessa. You look at Zaporozhye and Kherson, nope. The majority of the people want to remain who they are. When you hear someone talking about, well, you know, they're Russian, your mind automatically goes to a political support of Vladimir Putin. And it doesn't necessarily need to be that. It goes deeper, much deeper than politics. This is who we are. This is their families. This is their history. This is everything up until 2014. Their entire existence. And then to be told, well, it's not only not, you know, it's not only not worthwhile, you're not worthwhile if you hold on to it. So you've got pictures of your grandparents or great-grandparents that were heroes, and you have to say they're the enemy to make all this work. Put yourself in that position, because that's what the average Ukrainian is faced with. It's literally exactly what they're faced with. Imagine if all of a sudden, you know, the American equivalent would be, and most Europeans would be, if you were forced to pay homage to Nazi Germany. Not necessarily Hitler himself, mind you, but just the concept, the ideal, the idea of what Nazi Germany could be. Now that's revolting, and your eyes are probably rolling right now, just even suggesting something that just wildly ridiculous. It's that level of that type of insult that you would feel in that situation that most Ukrainians felt when Stepan Bandera was rolled out, Ukrainian nationalism. The fact that they actually had to collapse the media in Ukraine and make it one entire, you know, propaganda affair, a propaganda outlet. You know, it's too bad it's not alarming in the press. They only roll it out once in a while when it's Zelensky gets really, you know, off the wall, like the Polish missile crisis over there. Can you imagine that being done to you? Well, it's been done to everybody. Now, at the same time, imagine that, you know, they control all the media altogether, well, which they do, basically, but they only give you that story. And how good the government is that's doing this. And any way you look, every TV program, every radio program, they're censoring the internet in Ukraine. All of these things have to reflect that. So that is all the input that you actually ever get. That's what happened inside of Ukraine. And they're told over and over and over again that their own family were the evil on society when their family fought the evil. So you can, you know, that kind of thing it's not you know, a thought experiment. You can see a large degree in media today because it's happening to you, but nowhere near this extent where you're told to disown family. To be a patriot, you have to disown family. And, you know, unfortunately, until we get a handle on this, our world is threatened by that because they're setting it up to happen. And this is why they're giving so much money to Ukraine. The experiment, the political experiments going on are the wildest on the planet ever. No one's ever been able to do this before. And so, you know, it's kind of like you've got politicians dreaming up scientific experiments, social scientific experiments. Well, what else can we get them to do? How do we get someone to hate this? How do we get someone to disown their own parents? How do we get someone to turn in their parents because their parents you know, in America, it would be like, don't like Charles Manson. How do we get people to do that? And the experiments in Ukraine are showing how to do this on a mass scale. And they're taking all the stuff, all these the widely known experiments that were done, the motivation experiments that were done, like the Stanford experiments, and they're taking it to a level that was just never conceived before. Because you're not talking 10 or 20 people in a controlled, you know, setting. We're talking about millions of people that started out in the wild, and you had to get control of the environment. Gain control. Take control, gain control, maintain control. And this has been teaching some really, really bad politicos exactly what they need to do on mass scale. And this is a good part of the reason why they want to keep this thing going. This is that great reset. This is the setup for it. They're rushing to figure out how to make this work and how to make this stick in everyone's hometown. And how do you do this on such a scale that you have a large enough group? You know, let's say, you know, in America, you have a million people that stand out and say, hey, this is wrong. How do you get the other 300 million people to deal with them themselves? You see, if the government does it, it's against the Constitution. But if the people do it, well, it was a protest, it was a riot, it was unfortunate. It was a shame, it was unfortunate. We're not proud, but it happened. And it happened. We need to make sure it doesn't happen again. Well, after you wipe out the million people, which, you know, in real terms is a very small percentage of 300 million, no one's going to ever say anything again. They're going to go quiet. The murders in 2014 showed Ukraine that was the way to go. And it showed these people that was the way to go. But how do we fashion this to our Western societies in a way that's palatable, in a way that we can sustain this, in a way that even our own constituencies that vote for us don't turn on us because of this? And the way to do it is put them in a driver's seat. Reward them for it, the better they are at it. Give them political clout. Give them precedence. Well, oh, you want to be a minority and you're not a minority? Not a problem. We'll make it the new minority. Give them what they want. And they'll be more than willing participants. And that's exactly what happened, isn't it? This came out of Ukraine. It came out of Maidan. It came out of the aftermath of that. And we see a slow run-up in Western countries. And the only real reason is they're trying to decipher the end results. A lot of that still needs time to be studied, too. And think of it that way. Well, yeah, it worked. Yeah, they did this, they did that, but you know, how's this thing rebound? What are the side effects over time? What's going to happen? So they're pushing situations inside the Ukraine way beyond, you know, the war that's going on here. It's a giant political experiment. And it's just too bad. Ukraine itself, the population, before all of this happened, were some of the kindest people you'd ever meet. As soon as Ukrainian nationalists were able to get in the mix and take effective control, you see how fast a society can turn on itself and cannibalize its best. And that's exactly what they did. In every profession, they cannibalize the absolute best. And they replace them with nationalists who were better people, and because they were better people, it didn't matter whether or not they could do the job. they had the right politics. We've got a long way to go to bring this whole situation back across the world. The great start that we can get is making sure it tones down in Ukraine. And these people are brought in under heavy reins and taken to court and tried with crimes. I'm George Elias, and this is TNT Talk Radio. Thank you so much for coming by today. We'll see you soon.